welcome to another episode of Inside the Recording Studio. I am Jody Whitesides, and with me, as always, is Mr. Chris Hellstrom. How are you today, Chris?
I'm doing very well, Jody. How about you?
I have a little bit of back pain, but let's not get into that.
Let's not. That's not what we're chatting about. Today's topic is automation.
It is automation. So
I think, along with having a good arrangement of a song, automation is key to make it like a really solid mix.
I'm going to concur with your assessment right there. We can end the show now.
There we go. All right. We'll see you next week. All right. Automation seems like such an obvious part when it comes to mixing, perhaps.
Does it now?
I think it does. At least when you've been doing it for a minute, automation can be one of those things that, even though we have the capabilities of doing just about anything and adjusting any parameter, a lot of mixers will set a certain level and then just have it real static.
That's the difference of that 1% of additive stuff that you can do to a mix to go from amateur to pro now, isn't it?
I would even argue that it's a higher percentage than that.
Oh, but yeah? What percentage would you give it?
I would give it up to 20-25.
Wow, a quarter of it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, because it is one of those things where you listen to mixes or somebody asks you to critique a mix, and a lot of times it can feel really static. There's nothing happening. Like, okay, it starts off and instruments get introduced. They tend to stay at that level. There's nothing happening. And I think that's doing your mixes a real disservice, because it is so easy today, and the results are so much better if you apply a little bit of automation. That doesn't mean that obviously everything needs to sound like a Vegas casino, right? Where everything is
constantly moving,
everywhere. Yeah, and it's just noise everywhere. So just a little bit of thought into that and adjusting some of the levels and the pans will make it be a much more pleasurable, emotional experience. How about that?
Well, you just touched on two of the things that are the most common things to automate. One being volume, two being the panning.
Yeah. Yeah, those are the ones that, at least for me, do the heavy lifting. The other ones that we'll touch on in a minute here are more of the eye candy, clever bits,
right?
I would say. You know, when we talk about automation, the first thing I think people think of is just level automation. You know, things go up and things go down. And the same thing with panning, which is left and right, and are they moving in the stereo field?
True.
Let me ask you, because the volume automation is obviously one of interest as well when we're doing that. Let's say that we have a vocal track.
Yep.
How much are you writing volume automation to make sure everything is as upfront as you want it to be versus doing like clip gaining or adjusting the individual parts? Because I know you certainly don't let just like, oh, here I'm going to put an LA-2A on it and that's going to adjust the level.
Well, that's what I used to do when I first learned to mix a little bit.
That's what we all used to do.
I can smash it with a compressor and everything will be just fine. The answer to your question is more to do with the dynamics of the performance. If the performance is pretty even keel, there's not a lot of need to do a lot of volume writing unless there's a specific word or phrase that is mentioned that needs maybe a little extra oomph over the rest of it. If it's a performance issue, there's a lot of automation going on to get something to sound more even keel, so to speak.
But do you do that with pre-mix preparation and doing like adjusting different regions with clip gain, or how do you approach that? I mean, we're veering off the topic here a little bit, but I think it's important to kind of cover that.
That's a case-by-case basis right there. And sometimes if it's a region within my editing DAW, which is Logic, that's my tracking, writing, editing DAW. And if I'm getting a project that someone else has done and the region itself is weak in comparison to the rest in terms of volume, or if it's too loud in terms of volume, one way or the other, I will adjust that region.
And do you go down to different words and phrases? I'm assuming you do if you have to.
I go by peak level, actually, by regions.
Right.
So you know, the whole gain staging episode that we talked about had to do with trying to get things as close to minus 18 as possible in terms of your peaking. And that is a whole separate issue. But in terms of the volume thing, I do not go down to the molecular level in that instance, unless it's absolutely necessary. And I'd hope to God it's not.
Yeah, well, in a perfect world, it wouldn't be. But sometimes I find that I do a little bit of that before I really start mixing. Well, if I notice
if
that
it's necessary, sure.
Right. I don't do all of that just to have a super even. But if I notice that, okay, well, this phrase, the singer might have backed off a little bit from the mic or might be leaning in a little bit. So you kind of even those out. Because if I did all of that at the mixing stage, it would be way too much automation, right? And too big a jumps and stuff. So I do it at the mixing stage if certain phrases need to come out because of the arrangement or the song gets heavier or a word gets drowned in with everything else that's going on in the song. Obviously, I do it then. So that's where I would do my most judicious volume automation, in this case, vocals.
Sure. It's the same for any instrument, but vocals tend to get the most attention for that for sure.
Right. Let's talk about some of the other types of automation that we might do that might not be as obvious as the just the level. I mean, they're just variations of the same here, but send levels, like going to a bus.
Yep.
How often do you touch those within a song or an arrangement?
85% of the time.
Yeah?
Yeah, fair amount.
And what are the examples that you might do that with?
How much reverb is going to come out? How much of chorusing or whatever effect I put on it that's going to that bus gets? It's a matter of making it feel like it's moving a little bit. Sometimes.
Okay.
Sometimes I don't. Most of the time I do. Just to give a little bit of vibe, a little bit of throw in there.
Yeah, absolutely with you on that. But it's something that you might think about if there's, you know, a really sparse kind of, let's go back to vocal, right? So it's a vocal again. You might have like a little bit more verb on the verses, for example. That might be a little bit more sparse, and then you decrease the send to the reverb going into the chorus, what might be more dense and more intense, that kind of thing, where the reverb might smear a little bit too much.
Sure.
But do you ever do the other way of going around and getting the same thing, essentially, where you would do automate just a volume automation on the reverb return then, as opposed to on the send?
Very, very rarely. That has more to do with whether or not it has to fade out after it's been used before something else starts stepping on it and it's in the way.
Got it. Yeah, my way of thinking about that is if the reverb is shared with other instruments as well, they might still want the same amount of reverb on there. So I might just reduce it on the send as well.
Or I could see that. Send. I don't tend to do that, but yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Other things that can be automated would be what?
Effects parameters.
Yes.
Let's say that you have your favorite decapitator plugin going on and you're about to completely fry something. Obviously, you can automate just about anything. For me, at least, a little bit more of a special case. It might be that I want to ramp up the effect of whatever it is. It doesn't have to be distortion, obviously, but yeah. What about you, though? Do you do that a lot or is that something that is perhaps not as common?
That's a case-by-case situation as well. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. I'm going to say 50-50 on that in that regard. Yeah. There was a recent special use case that we discussed not long ago where it had to do with the gate on a channel strip in that I was losing certain parts of the track because the gate was too strong, but the gate had to be that strong in another portion of the track for a different reason.
Was automating the gate. Snare when you had like ghost notes and stuff.
Ghost notes on the snare that were getting lost because the gate was too strong. I had to automate the gate value of the threshold so that it would change depending on where it was at for the drum part that was happening. That was an interesting one. I had not thought about doing that before, especially with a gate, but it came in handy in automating that parameter.
Yeah.
Is there another one
we can do today? What else we got?
Bypassing inserts.
Sure.
That's another one. If you have a whole lot of effects sitting on your channel strip and at some point in the song you don't need it or you do need it, the easiest thing to do is to turn the bypass on and off. Very simple.
Right. Yeah. Sometimes I noticed, at least in Logic, that automation could be a little bit too fiddly, where you kind of do an, it should work perfectly and just cut it right there and then, but then with latency compensation and all that, that can be a little tricky to get that smooth, mm-hmm. unless you have like a clear cut point in the song. But that's something where you definitely want to trust your ears, as you should with everything. But here, don't take for granted that it's going to sound great. Mm-hmm. Same thing would be, of course, muting a track.
Right.
Would be the same thing as well. Right.
Certainly have done the same thing in muting tracks. It's almost like automating that gate. I want the gate to automatically mute the damn track when I don't want the information. Sometimes it's easier to just mute the track when there's a whole lot of noise going on. And I find that on specific effects, that is most effective. The one that's been the biggest culprit as of late when I use it that I need to mute a track for is vocal synth from Isotope. If I'm using a radical vocal synth sound, the thing's noisy as hell. So I will mute that track when it's not needed. And obviously when it's needed, you open it up and it's fine. And you don't really notice the noise and then you shut it back down when it's done.
Yeah, it can be very, very frustrating to have that almost like white noise just percolating in the background there. It's like...
Where's that noise coming from?
Yeah. And you reach for all your analog switches, but it's this plugin. Oh, okay, great. That's right. Yeah. One thing I wanted to touch on with this also is like with the effects parameters, mm-hmm. where you and I have a little bit of a different workflow when it comes to this. Let's go back to, I don't know, vocals, for example, because we barely talked about vocals. Mm-hmm. If you want a specific effect on, let's say that it's just a phrase, mm-hmm. if I remember correctly, you will more often than not just duplicate that track with that phrase, right? And treat that as a separate thing as opposed to bypassing an insert or an effects parameter on the main track. Do I have that right?
Most of that is correct. I will duplicate the phrase, not the entire track.
Right,
or the word or the syllable. I will cut that little piece of audio to a new track a lot of the time. It's cleaner to me to do that most of the time. As you mentioned, often with automation, there can be latencies that happen and they can be mind-numbingly frustrating to deal with. And in the effort of speed, I tend to cut the phrase to a new track.
Yeah.
And just duplicate the channel strip and do it that way. It tends to be easier for me anyway.
Today as well, where processing isn't really an issue. Yeah. So you can just do that. It is cleaner. It depends on a little bit what I'm trying to do. I've actually done stuff where to create sort of like delay echoes on a certain phrase, mm-hmm. instead of having an actual delay in there, I've duplicated the phrase I want the delay on or the word, and then just actually copy that over where I want the echoes to happen. And then volume ride those and do
multi-tap by hand, dude.
Exactly. For that old school tape vibe.
Right.
No, that's just me being masochistic. Sometimes if I want like specific echoes and also if I want to pan those certain ways, mm-hmm. that actually turns out to be a better way of doing it for me.
I don't disagree. Yeah,
it can be a little bit of cumbersome. Mm-hmm. Another thing that I wanted to touch on here, and this I think may be just exclusively to Logic. I'm probably wrong in that, but that's the only where I've kind of come across this, is the difference between track automation and region automation. And I know some people are kind of get confused about that, why you would use one or the other.
Mm-hmm. I know that so for Luna, there's only track automation. There is no region automation.
Yeah.
Not yet anyway.
I'm thinking if it's anybody, it's probably somebody like Studio One or something that might have it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. What's the difference there then, Jody? Track
automation is general automation that happens to every region on the track, depending on where you put your automation points and do your automation.
Yeah.
Region automation, on the other hand, is automation that is specific to that region only. And if you move that region, it stays with the region. Whereas with track automation, if you move the track or you move the region from one track to another, most dials will ask you, do you want to also copy the automation that goes with this?
Yeah.
Some do, some don't. That is the difference between the two, is that track automation doesn't necessarily travel with the region, whereas region automation travels with the region.
Yeah. That can be very handy for certain types of automation. And when I say certain times, I'm generally talking about panning because volume can, now you're getting into a mess and there can be competing volumes and stuff. Panning can be really cool. So let's say if you have a riser or whatever, it's got some crazy panning going on that's speeding up and doing like 16th notes hard left and right, drawing that in or however you get that into your DAW can be tedious to do again and again if you're going to use the same riser in this case.
Mm-hmm.
So doing that on a region basis, having that sort of baked into that region, so now when you use the riser again, that's already there. And it's the exact same thing. For things like that, it can be really, really handy. I know that some people get really confused when they're actually applying this. And it's like, well, why is it not doing this here? And it's usually because you're switching between track and region type of automation.
Mm-hmm.
But for things like that, I think it can be really, really cool.
I don't disagree, could obviously, but I don't use region automation very much. It's probably 2% of the time I might use region automation.
I'm with you there. It's, for me, it's handy, but if it's a situation that I just described, then I might do it because it makes it a little bit cleaner. When it comes to mix down as well, it might even be that if I have a certain effect like that, I might just commit that to the track and bounce it in place. So now it's baked into the actual audio file.
Sure. What are some good tips when it comes to automation?
Well, there's a lot to unpack here, I think. Generally use automation, volume, and panning to make our tracks sit the way we want them in the mix, to be heard,
mm-hmm.
right, in the mix, be as upfront or clear or whatever that we're kind of going for. But there are a couple of things that we can do that are possibly off the beaten path a little bit. I want to say that you have talked about this before on the podcast.
Probably have.
It's adding small differences of volume automation essentially on your main track. Now, you're not doing this on the master. I know that.
Mm-hmm.
You're basically doing small level automation between sections of the song.
Yes, I do that. I used to do it on the master itself prior to the way I mix now. The way I mix now has changed and I have to do it in a different area of the mix, but I do that, yes.
Can you describe that process? And also, just so we can explain that the reason why you're doing it in a different manner these days is because you do multiple mixes in one bounce.
That is correct.
Right.
That is the reason that there is that
little change. It gets a little convoluted.
The idea of this automation movement that I do, I'm not 100% sure where I picked it up, but I do know that there's one aspect to what I do with this that I picked up from Eric Valentine. And that is a slight little push and pull back on the downbeat of a new section.
Mm-hmm.
It's a spike of a hit, so to speak. And I'm emphasizing the downbeat of the new section when I do that. To go back and answer your question or what you just posed about the way I'm working it, I start my bus faders off at minus 1.5 dB. That is my lowest starting volume. The intro will usually push up around minus 0.5. The verse will be minus 1.5. The next section.
You get a little bit of a dip going into the verse. It takes
a little bit of a dip going into the verse. The intro will have a little more impact unless it's meant to be quieter. Drop down a little bit for the verse. If there's a pre-chorus, it will likely come up to about minus 1 dB for the first pre-chorus. And then going into the first chorus, it will come up to about minus 0.5 dB. And I'm giving this as a rough estimate of what's going on. And each change of those sections, there's a little spike where I hit the downbeat so that the downbeat, I accentuate the downbeat, and then it settles on that level that I mentioned in that rough area. After the first chorus, it comes back down for the next verse, but it doesn't come all the way down to minus 1.5. It usually comes down to minus 1. And then in the next pre-chorus, it goes up to minus 0.5. And then the next chorus up to the level 0. So that over the course of the song, it starts out a tiny bit quieter and ramps its volume level up over time. And each section has a different volume level. That provides interest and movement volume-wise. I think it also helps with alleviating ear fatigue as well.
Okay. Yeah.
Because there's a difference in volume. And while you don't hear drastic changes, and usually going 2 dB or more, that's fairly drastic and it's pretty obvious. But if you're doing smaller increments like half a dB or 1 dB, that's small enough, you're not going to just point it out and go, hey, that's 1 dB louder or that's 1 dB softer. It doesn't come out that way. But it comes out enough in your ears that you're not going to get as fatigued out of it.
And I think you feel it more than
you
actually hear it.
Right. At that point. If you do moves that are bigger than 2 dB, then you're actually hearing it. And it's not just a feeling. It's like, holy shit, that changed volume.
Do you still do this if you have a track that is arranged in such a way that there's already a big difference between sections? So let's say that, for example, you have like an intro and it's a whole whiz bang, everything is happening, and then verse one is just acoustic guitar and drums.
Yes. It's a smaller movement. It might not go 1.5 dB. It might only go a half dB.
But in principle,
it's still the same thing. Yes.
Got it. Okay. Now, one more thing on that. When you do those volume rides in between sections, mm-hmm. I imagine it's not just a drastic cut and it drops. You probably have like a little bit of a fade on that. And if you do that, where does that start? Does it start the fade at the beginning of the verse? Or does it start prior to the verse?
It's prior. Prior to each section is where the movement will start to happen. And a lot of it has to do with whether there's a fill of some sort going on and how important that fill is. Or if the transition feels like it needs a longer transition so it's less noticeable.
Yeah.
If it's a short fill, it might be really short. If it's a long transition, it might be really long, but it's still going to do the same thing, just depending upon what the value is that's changing. Oftentimes, it's no more than a quarter note.
Oh,
sometimes it might be a full bar. It depends on the speed of the song and what's going on. Oftentimes, it's as little as an eighth note most of the time. This is a real quick transition.
Wow, okay. Because when I've done those, I tend to do a little bit longer than that. Mm-hmm. It would definitely be more than one beat. But like you said, the arrangement and everything will
determine
what's going
to
be appropriate.
Yeah.
And what's going on and what have you.
What's another good tip for automation?
Well, this is another one that I know that we have mentioned. Mm-hmm. I'm going to mention it again because it is such a good tip.
Okay.
It is panning everything wider when it comes to chords.
Sure.
Let's say that you have double track guitars and they're sitting at 10 o'clock and 2, right, in the verses or whatever going. When you hit the chorus, they hit the full stereo width. Just a little bit more of a push, as Nigel Tufnell would say, to get you over that cliff.
Yeah.
But that is another one of those that adds a little bit more of an excitement, I feel. You don't necessarily like, oh my God, I could hear that they panned everything harder left or right. Certainly your average consumer is not going to hear that, but they might feel that it gets bigger or it feels wider or it makes them feel something. And then, you know, come back verse or whatever, you might pull them back in. So the panning things in stereo wider. Mm-hmm. Not the whole mix, but elements in the
elements
mix.
Elements of the mix, yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Is that something you do that pretty much every guitar mix that you do, right?
Just about, yeah. I do it in a lot of mixes, regardless of guitars or pianos or anything. It just is a nice way to spread things out and make the chorus feel, quote unquote, bigger, even if there's less instruments.
Yeah. So obviously all of these techniques that we can do with automation can just bring life and energy into what we do. And even these smaller changes add up to your mix being more alive and emotional, as it were.
And moving, and which is always a good thing. Let's move on to our Friday finds. Chris, what have you got this week?
I have a freebie, at least at the time of the recording of this. It's a plugin called Rando Machine by a company called Sound Device Digital. With a name like that, it kind of spells out what it does. It randomizes a certain parameter, and you can have it tempo synced and come up with all sorts of kind of cool things that you can do. You can add distortion, you can add rhythmic effect, panning, as we talked about, formants, a bunch of different stuff, and it's free, and it's awesome for like sound design-y kind of stuff. If you're throwing it on a boring keyboard pad, it just kind of brings it to life. So Rando Machine by Sound Device Digital. What have you got, Jody?
I'm going with a plugin this week as well. The plugin is called The Wow Thing.
Oof.
It is by Cornef Audio. It is a recreation of a little plastic box that was used for psychoacoustic processing using delays and phase.
I'm intrigued.
This is how you get that famous and infamous Metallica large guitar sound, I guess. The plugin is currently priced at $9.99, meaning $9.99 US, as of the recording of this podcast. It is normally $19.99. for the plugin. If you want that amazingly huge psychoacoustic guitar sound, the Wow Thing is the plugin you need.
Nice.
While we've got your attention, we ask that you go to InsideTheRecordingStudio.com and sign up for our mailing list. You'll need to be on our email list to be eligible for future giveaways, and we'll make sure you don't miss any future episodes of this awesome podcast. Send us an email at goldstar, G-O-L-D-S-T-A-R, at InsideTheRecordingStudio.com with the word automation, and you'll get something cool back in your inbox. If you have a topic or suggestion for Chris and I to explain in a future episode, contact us at the contact page and we'll put it into consideration for a future episode. With that, I'll say see you next week.
Talk to you later, Jody. Thanks for listening, everybody.